Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Academy. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service of public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you important information about law, news, and current events. Stay tuned for tonight's special report on Plowman's Folly when we come back. In 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." That clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. Public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper, things like stocks, bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, credit, debt, and usury. Well, back in 1965, our Congress said that there is no difference in the value of gold and silver coin as it relates to clad coin or Federal Reserve note currency. And that's very true when we're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper. And there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper money over gold. Now, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew, as a matter of law, that gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and our politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. These politicians knew and knew full well back in 1933 that in order for them to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away the people's gold and silver coin in order to take away the people's right to property and then destroy their property rights. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights, because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me teach you how to do just that. And that's in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adult home study. Now, if you'd like more information about our private business school, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? You know, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's very informative, it's entertaining, it's educational. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, my business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we were talking about this thing of plowing. Pretty common practice, all farmers plow. It isn't something that anybody thinks very much about. It's kind of taken in our country here as a no-brainer. Of course you plow. How would you prepare the soil for your next year's corn crop if you didn't plow first? But Edward Faulkner, back in World War II, published a book called Plowman's Folly in 1943. I've been reviewing the book and the concepts that are contained therein, and that is the problems that we face in agriculture, not just in the United States, but around the world, have a cause. Erosion has a cause. We don't have an erosion problem in the Amazon jungle. But the minute that we take the Amazon jungle and we clear 4,000 square miles of it, which we do every year, and then we start farming it, after a few years, we find that we have an erosion problem, where just a few years before, we did not have an erosion problem. So we covered that last time we talked about erosion. What causes this erosion? What is it? It isn't the mineral rock that's eroding. It's the organic material that's in the soil that is eroding. And we're losing the nutritive value in the soil. So when we lose the nutrition, when we lose the minerals that are in the soil, when we lose the iron, copper, manganese, sulfur, all these trace elements, all of a sudden we find out that it translates into nutritional deficiencies in the animals that eat those plants, which then translates into ailments or allergies or deficiencies or disease, which then translates into pain, suffering, and anguish, which causes us to go to hospitals, which cost a lot of money, which causes us to buy health insurance, and the whole problem can be traced back to the moldboard plow. Now, isn't that just special? It's a cause and effect relationship, cause and effect. You go to Flo's Whorehouse for a little fun on Friday night, and you end up with a little discharge, and then you find out one day that you've got some venereal disease, which then later on develops into, you know, and so you trace this back, and you say, gee, if I'd stayed away from Flo's, I probably wouldn't have had that problem to start with. And that's exactly why we have a law that says, thou shalt not commit adultery.
you have these cause and effect relationships. People are having a hard time identifying cause and effect relationships and then putting the cause together with the effect and then saying, well, gee, let's make an intelligent and rational decision. We just keep making these same mistakes over and over again. Farming's no different. We have erosion. I don't know that anybody ever goes to the root cause of the problem of the erosion, traces it back, and says, well, gee, maybe if we change this process or program. Now, there's an important reason why we never do that. We're constantly bombarded with propaganda. You see, commercial man comes out and he tells us to put on chemical fertilizer. We do that because we went to ag school. Commercial man comes to us and says, borrow money from the bank and leverage yourself out. In fact, buy two or three houses, because if you buy two or three houses, you'll get incredibly rich. Look how much the price of houses has gone up over the last 5 years, as if houses get more and more valuable, that termites don't eat them and roofs last forever. You know, as an old building contractor, I can tell you that houses do not get more and more valuable. They depreciate every year. The thing that is causing your house value to go up is the excessive liquidity in the economy. There's too much money out there. They don't have to go out and expend labor to dig gold out of the ground to put it into circulation as a medium of exchange. They just create money. In fact, they've been on a creation binge now for the last 5 years. Our money supply is expanding at the rate of around 10% a year over the entire Bush administration the last 5 years. This translates into a liquidity surplus, which has caused a housing bubble, which has now popped and is now on its way down. There's a cause and effect relationship. Now, it hasn't happened yet, but next year, you people out there that bought all these houses with these adjustable rate mortgages are going to be crying and lamenting. And your houses will be foreclosed on, and you won't be able to make your payments, and then your cars will be taken away. And then you'll get real mad and want to vote for the Democrats, who caused this bubble to start back in the 1990s with Bill Clinton. And George Bush is simply exacerbating the problem. He's continuing on with the monetary policies that were begun by his father back in 1990 when there was a recession. After the last big liquidity expansion under the Reagan administration in 1982, I guess is when they got cranking on that, which goes back to the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. Now, nobody alive today, breathing air today, can put a cause and effect relationship with what we call the housing bubble of 2006 with the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. Nobody can put that together. Historians can. Monetary people can. Economists can. But the average Joe Sixpack, you know, driving his Walmart truck down the road, collecting a paycheck now every week, he doesn't connect those dots. Now, the Bible connects dots, and it connects dots over long periods of time. And the dots that I'm pointing out to you is a massive worldwide famine. So a couple weeks ago, I pointed out that the aquifers are going dry. The aquifers are going dry because of the moldboard plow. The moldboard plow, discovered, invented, created back in 1827, which in 1827 made all the sense in the world. Made all the sense in the world. I mentioned this to you last time. I'll mention it for some of you that may be new and hadn't heard the preceding programs. But when our forefathers, you know, the old-timey colonists who had defeated the British, you know, back in the Revolutionary War, as our population expanded, we crossed the Allegheny Mountains and we went into the Ohio Territory, where the grass was so high it would hide a man on horseback. They had tremendous sod. These people couldn't break that sod with their wooden tools, so they needed iron tools, and so this guy John Deere invented the moldboard plow for the express purpose of destroying vegetation. That's what it was for. It's what it did. Worked like a shot. And we've been using it ever since. We don't need it anymore because we don't have that kind of rank vegetation, but once the habits, once it got ingrained in our farming practices, we now have to do that. We just do it as a matter of habit. And then because we do that, we're losing tremendous amounts of organic material in the soil, which then forces us to use chemical fertilizers, which in turn produces lower and lower quality produce, which in turn produces people who have allergies and sicknesses, as I've pointed out. There's this chain, there's this cause and effect relationship. So at some point in time, there comes a finality, there comes an ultimate end called death. If we continue on doing this, the ultimate end is going to be death. Now, we've pointed that out from time to time, and that's exactly what Revelation chapter 6 points out. There's this old-timey story that you heard in Sunday school called the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Preachers don't talk about that anymore because it's not politically correct. But for those of you old-timers, you know, you might have gone to Sunday school once or twice like I did, and you might have heard this story, or you might have been on the job and somebody told you, or some evangelist, you know, got real excited one day, you know, and his eyes were bugging out, and he was preaching Jesus and him crucified and talked about Revelation 6 or something, the four horsemen. Yeah. Now, the connecting link between the four horsemen of Revelation 6 and your impending demise is with the aquifers, in which 50% of all the people in the world, 50% of humanity, half of us, get our water out of these aquifers, which are all going dry. And we've been doing this for about 75 years because we don't get rain in due season. Now, the rains come at the wrong times, and when the rains come, they come in torrents, you know, like Hurricane Katrina, or like the drought out in the West. And that isn't just endemic in the United States, it's worldwide. These fluctuations are going on worldwide. Now, the fluctuations could be tolerated if we had a higher mass of organic material in our soil, which we have been steadily mining in the United States and Canada and Australia over the past 200 years. You know, we've only been on this land for a couple hundred years. It isn't like, you know, Europe, where people have been on that land for thousands of years. I mean, hell, the English, you know, over in Great Britain and in Ireland, they can point to their history and go back, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 years. There's been people over there farming that ground for a long, long time, and they're still doing it. Maybe they're doing something different 1,000 or 2,000 years ago. Maybe they were farming a little different way than we are today. They didn't have that moldboard plow. They didn't have irrigation. They weren't poking holes in the aquifer. They had to maintain soil fertility. They had to maintain the organic material in the soil in order to still be there. Now, we haven't had to do that. See, in America, we're exploiters over here, and we have been exploiting the land. And we're down to about the last exploitation. We're now creating these GMOs, genetically modified organisms, in order for us to maintain the same food production, albeit the food production that we're now producing with these GMOs has increasingly less and less vitamins and minerals in the products that we're producing, which in turn is producing more and more disease. We haven't got to that yet, but we're on our way. And this brings us to famine. And this famine, which is described in this Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, ultimately destroys one-fourth of humankind. There is an impending collapse in agriculture just around the corner. As population increases at the rate of 100 million people a year, that's a tenth of a billion. Every 10 years, we add a billion people to the population. Did you know that? You got 6 billion now. 10 years from now, you'll have 7. 10 years later, you'll have 8. 10 years later, and so on. And as this population grows, it's growing geometrically. But the land mass, you know, the total volume, the total number of acres available to feed these people is finite, and it's getting smaller. And up in China, they are destroying land in China at the rate of 1,000 square miles a year. In the Sahara Desert, it's at the rate of 100 square miles a year. And in the Amazon Basin, it's 4,000 square miles a year. We are destroying the land from which we get our crops at the same time that we are doubling our population. Now, boys and girls, you don't have to be a Malthus and you don't have to be a real smart kid to figure out that, at some point in time, Malthus thought that it was impending right away. And so we have discounted Malthus' theory of overpopulation because he said that 300 years ago, nigh on to that. Well, just because he was ahead of his time and he figured that this is going to happen in 100 years or 200 years and it didn't happen doesn't mean that it won't happen in the next 100 or two. And by the way, if you're one of those that says, well, if it happens 100 years from now, I won't have to worry about it. My God, aren't you going to have some children? Is that what you want to do to your children? I mean, we Americans have been borrowing money now for about 100 years and then leaving the debt for our children. My dad did that and left the debt for me, and I did that and left the debt for my children. What is there ever a time when we become financially or fiscally responsible and we pay our debts and we don't pass this on to the coming generations? Because the debt now in this country is so great, we can't pay it. We can't even service the interest on the debt. And that has a consequence. And all of these events that have consequences are going to impact upon all of us. So I'm not suggesting that I'm going to get out of here scot-free. What I'm suggesting is that now that I see what the problem is, I'm going to do everything in my power to alleviate the consequences of that problem. I'm going to eat better food. I'm going to avoid GMOs because I don't want the attendant diseases that come from it. Not that I'm opposed to disease. I mean, my God, if we didn't have disease, how would doctors, nurses, and health professionals make a living? We need sick people. I don't deny it. I just don't want to be one of them. And if you do, well, you know, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. Which now brings us to the crux of our problem here. We've got a subject coming up I mentioned last time called tile treachery. Tile treachery here in Faulkner's book goes like this. And we create this problem through the Department of Agriculture. I mean, we subsidize it with your tax dollars. So here's what the story is. The drainage of imperfectly drained and saturated soils used in crop production is a well-established practice. True, in fact, tile drainage probably is too well established in many places, and we have installed so much tile that the community water supply has been adversely affected, to say nothing of the even more serious problem of crop yields. The wisdom that grows from experience tells us that drain tile installed where it is not imperatively needed is the surest route to low crop production. Now, perhaps the most serious indictments that can be drawn against tile drainage are these. First, that the land where the rain falls is likely to need the water after it has been carried away through the tile. And then second, that innocent people now, downstream, are apt to be disturbed by floods that are needlessly high because of water wasted through unnecessary tile installations. Tile, then, is a disturbing factor in relation to both local water resources and frequently recurring floods. It consequently becomes the obligation of everybody concerned with the elimination of an aggravating wet spot to think far beyond that immediate need before deciding to throw additional water into the streams. Now, to date, this tile treachery, as Faulkner is referring to here, it goes back a long time. You know, we used to have these floods, and then we came along and said, well, let's control the floods. Let's build dams across the rivers. Let's build reservoirs. And let's irrigate. So man now has the capacity. I mean, we're like a bunch of ants, you know, in an anthill. And if there's enough of us get together, you know, we can move mountains. And we have. And we can build great levee systems like we did down in New Orleans. And then all of a sudden, we find out that our manipulation of the environment around us, such as this thing that now they're calling global warming. I'm not of the opinion that mankind is causing all this global warming. I don't deny that we're probably throwing gasoline on the fire, but I doubt seriously, honest to God, I doubt seriously, that man is responsible for global warming. I think that's part of Bible prophecy. I think it's a part of these end times that God himself has warmed the oceans. But then, let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion, that yes, indeed, it's caused by all of the power plants that we're burning all this coal in, and that we men have done the whole deed all by ourselves. What the hell difference does it make? The results are the same, aren't they? I mean, every night on the news, somebody comes along and they say, oh my God, there's this global warming out here, and it's causing hurricanes to get more and more violent. Okay. And we seem to see that when there's a 1 or 2 degree rise in the temperature of the Gulf of Mexico, those hurricanes get more and more violent. Does it make the hurricanes less violent if God creates the temperature rise? Or does it make the hurricanes more violent if we, the men who create the increased temperatures by burning coal to make electricity, would that make them more or less violent? Seems like to me that the problem's 6 of 1 and a half dozen the other, doesn't it? But when we go back in the history of this and we start looking at, well, what what seems to be causing the malaise or the problems that we're having with the weather, with the floods, with the dikes, with the levees, with the dams, with the hurricanes, with the soil depletion, with the population explosion, and so on. Can we draw lines from the dots to the dots to the dots, come to a conclusion, and then can we do something constructive to correct it? Because, boys and girls, if there isn't any solution to the problem, what in the hell does all of the job owning do? I guess we will be the generation that was destroyed while we were talking about global warming. What are you going to do about it? Honest to God, if President Bush and the Kyoto Treaty and all of the people in the world were attuned to and wanted with all of their hearts to reduce the Earth's temperature by a degree or two over the next 100 years, I don't believe that you could accomplish that goal. I don't believe it. We've never accomplished anything else. We couldn't even agree to do it, much less accomplish the feat. So we might as well wake up to the fact that if there is no God in heaven who is going to come down here and save our asses from ourselves, that we're all lost. As the Magumbo would say, we're all freaking doomed. Now, fortunately, boys and girls, there is something that you can do for yourself at the local level. To hell with George Bush and the Congress of the United States. They're not going to solve your problems. You saw that with Hurricane Katrina. They're down there today with FEMA. They don't know whether their hind ends are bored or punched and couldn't find it at high noon with both hands. And the only solution is to print and spend more money. It's the only solution that a politician can come up with. Most people don't need more money down there on the Gulf Coast. They need more labor. They need more work. Well, going back here to tile treachery, he says that much unnecessary tile is laid with full approval of farm specialists, as indicated by this further quotation taken from page 723 of the United States Department of Agriculture yearbook back in 1938. For years, some farmers have seen wet spots in good fields drown out with loss of labor, fertilizer, and seed, not to mention the seldom considered rental value of the land. Yet they made little or no attempt at drainage until they changed from horses to tractors. When the heavy machinery mired down, they decided to drain. Now, realizing the seriousness of the situation and holding up the sale of farm machinery and possibly wishing to improve the farmer's ability to buy new equipment, one manufacturer published a bulletin on drainage called Drain the Wetland by R.A. Hain, Chicago, 1921, even though the company produced no drainage tools. Now, these quotations indicate the authentic point of view among professional agronomists and prove that unwise tile installations may actually be put in with full approval of farm advisors. Indeed, a careful reading of the entire chapter from which these quotations are taken fails to reveal any cautions against overdoing what is considered an excellent practice. The impression one gets is that the future success of farming rests, to a large extent, on the completeness with which the land area is drained. The writers certainly are not nervous from dread that too much tile is being laid on our farms. Now, I'm not suggesting that today in 2006 we're out here laying tile like we used to. The difference today is that our machinery is bigger, and so our changes to the landscape. For instance, I mentioned this, I think, a couple of weeks ago. We have large areas of irrigated land today that would have been impossible 100, 200, 300 years ago, because we couldn't level it, we couldn't irrigate it, we couldn't move it. Today, men, human beings, are able to do things to the surface of the land that was unimagined 100 or 200 years ago. This levee system that we've installed in the United States up and down the Mississippi and the Missouri rivers is an Achilles heel. And we have put it in, and we spend billions and billions of dollars every year maintaining this levee system. You saw what happened back in 1993 when God gave us, I think it was, something like 3 months of continual rain, which created the flood of the century. I blame it on God rather than caprice. Every once in a while, he does things like that. And all of the levees up and down the river just failed one after another. And all of these billions and billions of dollars that we've been spending over here for all of this drainage, you know, and all of this protection that we think that we're protecting ourselves with just went right down the river. I don't know how much money was lost in the flood over there, but it demonstrates the point that Faulkner was making back in the 1940s here. And that is, there's a natural methodology whereby we can all get along quite well, but we're not practicing the natural methodology. We're not relying, for instance, upon rain in due season. We say, to hell with God, we'll poke holes in the ground. We're not satisfied with rain in due season. We come along and we say, we're going to build the levees over here to protect us from these floods. And boys and girls, floods are not rain in due season. And hurricanes aren't rain in due season. And drilling holes in the ground is not rain in due season. And to get rain in due season, our God tells us that we're going to have to practice the Ten Commandments. And we say, to hell with the Ten Commandments. We're going to build levees. We're going to poke holes in the ground and give God the finger at the same time. Faulkner puts his finger on the pulse of the situation. Hell, you know, when I was a little kid, 5 years old, he wrote this book. And he said, hey, let me tell you what the problem is. It's the moldboard plow. That's where it starts. And then as time progresses along and as the organic material in the soil depletes, you get more and more wet spots for which you need more and more drainage, for which you need more and more machinery, for which you need more and more levees, for which you need more and more intrusion, from which you need more and more intensive farming, from which you need, and you know, as we continue to build and build and build on this false infrastructure, we create a bigger and bigger and bigger problem, as is now being pointed out down south of New Orleans, when you point to the wetlands that are disappearing down there. That's what tile treachery finally gets to. It's the destruction of the environment south of New Orleans. The landmass is being inundated by the Gulf of Mexico. That's the inevitable end to this chapter on tile treachery. And so we're sitting down there saying, oh my God, we got to spend more billions and billions of dollars down here to protect the oil industry, which was the billions and billions of dollars that we spent to create the oil industry south of New Orleans out there in those wetlands. And now we find that they're being inundated because we built the levees and channeled the mud and the silt and the dirt down the river and out into the Gulf and then away from the wetlands. Hang on a second. Let me tell you a little story here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Let me flip my page here, show you how well I'm prepared. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, you can go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log, schedule, and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please go to the telephone and call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily 100% endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. All right, now the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing a book here called Plowman's Folly, written by Edward H. Faulkner. Remember, you can probably get a copy of this book from your local used bookstore. Just tell the guy the name of the book and the author. It's Plowman's Folly, Edward H. Faulkner. Tell him to find you a copy, and he'll find you one somewhere in America. We're on the section here called Tile Treachery, and I'm just pointing out that what's been going on here in America has been underwritten by the Army Corps of Engineers, the Department of Agriculture, the Congress of the United States, and we have been working diligently on this program for the last, 70 or 75 years, at least since Franklin Roosevelt hit office. In those days, we needed to do these projects because it put people to work, and then it got to be such a good idea, we said, well, let's just keep on doing it. Then it became ingrained in our economy, and now we do it. We're building levees to this day. We're draining and building, and we're not relying upon rain in due season. And then when rain comes, and we don't have the organic material in the soil to absorb it, we're relying upon dikes and levees to channel the water. We've been doing that for so long, we have disrupted the ecosystem south of New Orleans. Now we've gotten stronger and stronger hurricanes, exacerbated by higher and higher temperatures in the seawater, which then give us more and more of these out of balance, kind of like a pendulum swinging from side to side, only it's getting further and further out of balance. He goes on to say these quotations indicate the authentic point of view among professional agronomists. These wet spots present the visual evidence that tile is apparently needed. They appear on land which originally did not permit water to stand. And as the years pass, more and more of the land that formerly needed no subsurface drainage develops these wet spots. And before we can properly diagnose this mania for excessive drainage, we should know that these wet spots really are, or what they are, and why they develop where they do. And it'll help our analysis to consider the apparently complete lack of understanding of soil facts displayed some time ago at a meeting of potato growers when this matter came up for discussion. The incidents is illuminating. You see, the drainage problem had been found on the land of one of these farmers. He had discovered that water stood in a certain low spot in one field. He knew that there was tile not far from where this water stood. Search after the water was gone disclosed that the tile was directly under the center of the pool. Examination at the outlet while the water still stood on the land showed that the tile was running and that it was not loaded, but that it could easily have removed the standing water. And yet the water stood for days just over this active tile line. So the land in question was heavy, lake-laid clay, a few miles from Lake Erie. The verdict of the farmers in conference was that this heavy clay had been worked too much, or when it was too wet, it had become puddled. Clay, in such conditions, conducts water only by very slow capillary action. So this verdict was probably correct. At any rate, it squares well with the slow rate at which the standing water disappeared. Troweling by the moldboard plow when soil is too wet does for it just what a sow does to the bottom of her wallow when she finds a little water standing in it. So she smears the mud with a sort of sliding roll, which effectively smooths and then seals the surface against the passage of water. The next time it rains, she will have a nice place to wallow, and the water will remain until it evaporates. No self-respecting sow would try to make a wallow unless the site were mineral in character, entirely free from straw, corn cobs, or other organic debris. These latter materials would drain away the water because the open cellular structure of organic matter is conducive to moisture flow. These farmers evidently had good hog wallow material, which was precisely what they did not want. Now, they had it not only at the foot of the slope, but all over the surrounding watershed. Obviously, what they needed to do was the converse of the sow's problem. They must provide organic drainage for the surrounding slope so the water would not converge on the low ground. Their faith in tile and possibly their firm, hard-headed American belief that the more a thing costs, the more it's worth, kept them from thinking of the simple and inexpensive solution to their problem. Water that falls on the upper reaches of a slope cannot possibly find its way to the lower ground if the intervening soil is absorbent. Really, absorbent soil simply cannot conduct water over its surface. There are two forces operating to prevent its doing so, and the action of either is usually sufficient. The vertical pull of gravity is fully capable of pulling water into the soil provided the surface has not been made impervious. The gravity is reinforced by the capillary pull of any absorbent surface. So let's suppose that a roof is covered with a half-inch pad of blotting paper. How soon might we expect to see water dripping off of the roof? Well, certainly not until the blotting paper itself was completely saturated. Well, the identical thought applies to any slope over which water is accustomed to run. If the water succeeds in reaching the lower ground, it does so only because the condition of the surface forces it to run off. So in this connection, it's very interesting to recall the remarks of a prominent agriculturalist with whom I was discussing this problem, and I suggested that little water could get away from a cove soil, and he agreed. He reinforced the thought with the information that he had seen cove soil on 90% slopes and had been unable, though he watched during a heavy rain, to observe any runoff. Boys and girls, let me pause right there. I suspect that most of you live in the city, and you're taxpayers. You pay for all of this tile treachery. You people in Seattle and Los Angeles and San Francisco are paying for the reconstruction of the wetlands south of New Orleans. You pay for it with your tax dollars. It doesn't accomplish the desired goal. It's totally counterproductive. And in the final analysis, it's going to get worse and worse and worse. Now, let me tell you what the solution is. Notice what this agronomist said, that he had seen land on mountainsides that has 90% slope. Boys and girls, that's practically straight up and down. And yet the water doesn't wash the dirt away. Why? Because it's like a sponge and it soaks it up. Now that's what those wetlands are all about. It soaks up the water. It takes the thrust of the hurricane coming in from the Gulf and dissipates it over the land. Now this starts way, way up the river, boys and girls. It starts up the river in Minnesota and Wisconsin and Illinois and Iowa and Missouri, where we have been farming for many, many years, listening to commercial man sell us commercial fertilizer so that we could dissipate the organic material in our soils faster and faster, so that we could create this hydroponic dreamland through Monsanto and these multinational corporations and the Army Corps of Engineers, who keep telling us we'll build more and more levees and we'll put on more and more fertilizer, produce bigger and bigger crops, and we'll have more and more GMOs, and we'll have more and more plowing, more and more of the same industrial agriculture that caused the problem to start with. And we'll solve it with more and more chemical fertilizer, more and more spray, more and more GMOs, more and more dikes and levees, and more and more and more and more and more and more tax dollars, which, boys and girls, not only doesn't solve the problem, it exacerbates it and makes it worse. Makes the whole problem worse. Now, the solution goes way, way back to Moses at Mount Sinai and the practice of land Sabbaths and Jubilees, and we said nix to that, and we're not religious kooks, and we're not going to practice land Sabbaths and Jubilees, come hell or high water. Okay. Okay. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But now the world's food supply is being exacerbated by higher and higher birth rates, longer and longer lifespans, at the very same time that we're over here decimating the land, destroying the crop fertility or the soil fertility, because we're consuming more and more of the organic material in the soil, and we're not putting any of it back. And hell, we don't even know how. And we're not even discussing it. And in the halls of Congress, if I were to walk in to the Agriculture Committee and tell this story right here, the same story I'm telling you, the solution to the problem was laid out by this guy Faulkner in 1943. He said, here's the cause of the problem, and here's the solution. So this chapter on tile treachery that he's talking about over here, it doesn't deal just exactly with this practice of putting tile in the ground. Hell, we've gone beyond sticking tiles to drain puddles out of our fields. We have exacerbated this problem to such a degree that we now have levees up and down the Mississippi River that stretched clear out to the Gulf of Mexico, for crying out loud. Our intent to control God has gotten to such a point now. I doubt that there is a point of return at this late juncture of time. I doubt it. But in any event, if you want to start where you're at, and I'm going to start where I'm at here on my farm, I took a look at this poking holes in the ground to get groundwater out of here, and I came to the conclusion I've seen the light now. Hey, listen, we got off on the wrong track here with this Roosevelt program. We decided that instead of rain in due season, that we'd poke holes into the aquifer and we'd suck water out of the aquifer. Well, that's great. That's terrific. As long as I'm the only guy in the neighborhood that's doing that, it's a great idea. As soon as my neighbors pick up on the idea, then all of a sudden it's not such a great idea. You know, one or two of us using chemical fertilizers over here and producing these great green crops, that's a good idea, and it can work. But when everybody starts doing that, pretty soon the nutritional value of the food goes down to such a low level that it affects the entire population of the nation, and that's where you're at today. The reason that 99% of Americans have symptoms of some kind of disease, I think now there's 435 diseases in the physician's desk reference. It seems like it's some number along that line, 400 to 500 of these diseases. And what they've done, boys and girls, is that you've got water, you know, tears running out of your eyes, your nose is stopped up. And then they call that an allergy. They call that an allergy. And because they can hang a label on it, they say, okay, now let's go to Pfizer and let's come up with some chemical compound that we can sell to you that's going to relieve those symptoms. And we, sure enough, we come up with this chemical composition of some kind of compound, and we feed this to you, and my God, my nose is clear and my eyes have stopped watering. Now you're dependent upon this chemical compound for the rest of your life, because as soon as you quit taking it, your nose stops up and your eyes run again. You know, people today have asthma. Asthma's always been around, but my God, I've never seen so many people with asthma. Every time I talk to somebody, oh yeah, that's my asthma kicking up. Where in the hell did all this asthma come from? When I was a kid, there might have been a person or two around in the neighborhood that had asthma. My God, it's so common today. If you don't have asthma, it's like designer glasses. When I was a kid, there were a few people with bad eyesight that wore glasses. Mainly old people wore glasses with bad eyesight. Today, everybody's got glasses. Hell, if you don't have glasses, you go buy them so that you can look like you've got glasses on. Look at the ads on TV selling you glasses for the future. Young people, I mean, people in their 20s and 30s have got these new lenses here, you know, that adjust to daylight and dark. New age lenses or something. For crying out loud, people that wear glasses have a deficiency. There's something wrong with their eyes. They got a disease. They got eye disease. People that can't hear have ear disease. They're dis-ease. They're ill at ease. Faulkner hit the nail on the head. It all has to do with the organic material that's in your soils. When you see a wet spot out there, boys and girls, it's because you don't have enough blotter out there to soak up the water. And you've got too much mineral earth out there. What you've got is a pig wallow, a hog wallow. That's what your problem is. And you solve the problem not by plowing. No, it's by more organic material. That's what you need in that soil, is organic material. I pointed out to you, I think it was last time, I'm living on a piece of real estate that historically, you know, you go back in history. No, before I was born, before my granddad was born in 1880, there was 2 feet of topsoil on this region of the Ozarks. 40,000 square miles of real estate had 2 feet of soil on it today. It would be lucky if we got an inch. We're down to the mineral soil here. I mean, it is terrible here. Ugly. Nasty. We need more organic material in the soil. That's what we need. But instead of that, we've got bulldozers out here clearing the forest so we can plant more grass with more chemical fertilizers. And yes, boys and girls, it's true. With chemical fertilizers, you can grow grass on mineral earth for a while longer. But you know, even that comes to an end. Yeah, we can stretch it out a little while longer. That's what Alan Greenspan did with the recession of 2000. Instead of facing up to the imbalances in the monetary system, instead of going back to gold and silver coin, we said, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to go to the fundamental root cause of the problem. What we're going to do is treat the symptom. The symptom is that we've got a recession. What we need is to expand the money supply, increase liquidity, and create a real estate bubble. Boys and girls, at some point in time, this is all going to come home to roost. It's all coming home to roost. And when it does, there's going to be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, and there's going to be sadness and crying like you can't believe. So the time to get started is right now. The time to start making meaningful changes at the family level, at the cellular level of society, that's the family level, is right now. And the sooner you get your house in order, the less weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth you're going to go through. That's the bottom line. Now listen to this. If water will refuse to run off of a 90% slope covered with a layer of absorbent material, surely we have a clue that may help solve the runoff problem on the slight slopes that we usually farm. If we can make the surface layers of soil absorbent to a sufficient depth, we certainly will not have to worry about runoff and erosion, just as nobody worried about these problems when the land was new. They were not problems then. You know, when our forefathers first got here on all of this virgin soil, this virgin land, we didn't have any problems with water setting on the ground nor water running off so fast that it eroded the soil. We didn't have that problem. Now, when ground is standing straight up and down and it rains on it, and you know, and it doesn't erode, well, there must be something holding it there, wouldn't you think? Now, I've seen some pretty steep forest land. We have it right here. I've got some pretty steep forest land. I mean, it's not 45 degrees or 90 degrees or 80 or 70 degrees. It's not standing on end, but it's steep ground. And where there's forest, where there's leaves on the ground and there are logs and limbs and leaves and all of the organic material, there is no erosion, none, zero, zilch. Now, where I observe erosion is where these guys come in here and they clear the land. I mean, they just clear it. It's worse than logging. It's worse than clear cutting. I mean, they just come in here and clear it. Pile up all of the debris and burn it. Put chemical fertilizer on the ground and plant seeds. And it grows. God, it's lush growth. Don Neutchman's got a field over here that reminds you of North and South Dakota with corn on it. I mean, just just beautiful. Now, that's mineral soil under there. He's got the same kind of ground I got over here. Don, by the way, has a piece of ground over here that's next to mine. And it's the old Hub Ingram place. They went over and they cleared it. And every time it rains, the creek is full. I mean, that creek is full. It is washing out. There was an old black guy that built rock walls here after the Civil War, between the Civil War and 1900. And those rock walls are now washing out where Don Neutchman has cleared the land. And when it rains, the water runs off of the land and into the creek that runs from the VFW hall down here to my place and floods my valley. So I'm not impervious to my neighbors and their poor land practices. But hey, we got to have more grass so that we can put on more cows, so that we can make more money to put in John Harlan's bank, so that it can inflate out of existence, so that we can create a bigger bubble in our economy, so that we can weep and wail a whole lot more when this thing turns to manure. And that's the way life is. And that's what the story of tile treachery is all about. We can intervene in our environment, but we do so at our own peril. That's the bottom line. Organic material in the soil is where you want to go. You want more organic material in your soil, not less. All right, we're just about out of time, so let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night at the same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.